Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus here today to talk about the Las Conchas wildfire. We're going to do some updates this hour. The fire continues to burn near the town of Los Alamos and Los Alamos National Laboratory. It's currently estimated to be up to 90,000 acres, maybe even a little bit more. Today, again, we're taking your calls with stories and questions about the fire. We'll have elected officials with us this morning and some people who can talk about closures on forest land. We'll also talk about evacuations. The number to call, 505-277-5866, 877-899-5866. You can also email your comments to callinshow@kunm.org. With us on the line to start off the program, Representative James Hall. Good morning, sir.
And good morning to you, sir.
You represent the community of Los Alamos. What are you hearing from your folks who've evacuated because of the fire?
Well, let me first say that I not only represent Los Alamos, I represent part of Sandoval and part of Santa Fe counties. But back to your question, the people I've been visiting remain enormously positive. I mean, they're sheltered. Well, actually, they're sheltering with family, with friends, in motels. And then the Santa Clara Hotel graciously gave up a large room, and the Red Cross is running a shelter there. And the Cities of Gold has also been sheltering. I think the last count there was about 55 residents. I'm not sure of the count. The counts at the Santa Clara were, I think, about 90 and 55 at the Cities of Gold. And so we've got a whole broad spectrum of people that I've talked to, people who are with family and people who are sheltering in motels, and then, of course, the people who are in the Red Cross shelters.
And, sir, as you drive around and you meet with folks during the day, what are you hearing from them? What are their questions, things that they need information about?
Well, I can tell you, the first question always is, when can we get back to our homes? That's just, you know, that, and of course, that's not answerable at this point. It is becoming a little clearer. They're having some success with the back burns and so on. But, you know, I think that the Los Alamos County government has made the right decision in saying that they will not put people at risk of another evacuation. The worst thing we could do, the worst thing they could do, because it's their decision, is to bring people back and then at some point have to move people out again. That's just totally unacceptable.
Are people asking about the safety of their homes and what's going on while they're away?
Yes, and that's sort of the second question that comes up. Well, are homes safe? What's happening? And, you know, we have National Guard troops, local police forces. I think every effort has been made to ensure the safety of the homes from looting, although that's, I think, fairly rare in Los Alamos. But also what's happening is that the local fire department, with some help from people in Santa Fe, fire departments in Santa Fe and elsewhere, have been driving around and on the very outer rim of Los Alamos homes have been doing some wetting down of roofs and some wetting down of yards, et cetera.
Trying to keep the fire away from those homes.
Well, the issue is, of course, embers. Mm. And especially if we have high winds, embers can travel a quarter or half a mile or even longer. And so what they're trying to do is ensure that embers don't catch a home or somebody's private property.
Are you hearing from people that they say that the city and the county is more prepared this time because of the El Cerro Grande fire in 2000?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, it's probably a very irreverent comment, but practice makes perfect, I suppose. Although I think everybody would have been happy to do without either the practice or the exercise. Absolutely. One of the things that I think has been just amazing about this fire is the speed at which it traveled. It took the Cerro Grande fire about 2 weeks to cover 43,000 acres. This fire did it in less than 24 hours. And so there was almost no time to prepare. And as soon as there was a fire, as soon as it became noticed that it was traveling fast and traveling toward Los Alamos at a high rate of speed, literally everybody put plans in place, and the plans in place, and they seem to have worked very reasonably well.
What are we looking at for today? What are you going to be watching for?
Well, what I'm watching for is they did a large back burn along the western side of Los Alamos, basically to remove fuels. And so, of course, the first thing one always looks for is wind. This thing is the fire is basically driven by wind and the availability of fuel. They did a major effort yesterday when the wind was relatively calm to remove potential fuels between the community and the fire. And I think that was fairly successful. They did have one spot fire develop in a canyon near the town, and that was quickly put out.
Sound like people were concerned about that yesterday when they saw that plume go up again.
Oh, yes. I did tell you, people are getting so they really watch for plumes. I was down in Cochetee Lakes yesterday the afternoon, and then over in Jemez Springs last night. And Cochetee Lakes, boy, there was a plume that started, and that was noticed immediately. I think people responded very rapidly. So I think everybody's become very sensitized to any plumes.
Well, Representative Hall, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll let you get on to talking to some of your constituents, and we'll take some calls.
I'd be happy to.
Take care of yourself. Let's hear from Glenn in Jemez Springs. Glenn, what comment do you have for us this morning?
Good morning. Thanks for having this. I want to congratulate Linda Riddle and all of the forestry people, all of their affiliates who met with 250 of us last night here in Jemez Springs. They are doing a tremendous job. What a challenge with 90,000 acres gone. One of the local business people spoke up last night at the meeting, and we really need to get this word out to the listening audience. The signs that say the road is closed due to the wildfire are misleading, because Highway 4 from San Ysidro and Highway 550 going up to Farmington, Highway 4 is open all the way to Jemez Springs and then on to La Cueva, 9 miles further up. We have a major July 4th celebration here, parade on the 4th starting at 10 o'clock, and 1,000-plus people generally come here to Jemez Springs, and we encourage people to come. The fire is not coming our way, and Hummingbird Music Camp up here, the children there are safe. The children at the YMCA camp up here are safe. So that's one thing. The other thing is I would encourage people to call the Zia Pueblo governor to shut down the fireworks concession in San Ysidro, and that's 867-3304. We have no business, in my opinion, in the opinion of hundreds of people I'm talking to have any fireworks anywhere in New Mexico, especially around Jemez Springs.
Thanks, Glenn. We got a question. Representative, we also have a question from someone in our email asking, what are the legal issues from Governor Susana Martinez's executive order on fireworks in New Mexico? Do you have an answer for that?
Boy, I sure do. I've been at several meetings where she's spoken directly to this issue, both to the press and to the public. She is limited by New Mexico state law to issuing an executive order that bans fireworks sales or use on state lands, and she did that in April. Local communities have the option under state law to ban certain types of fireworks, and I know that Los Alamos has done that, as well as a number of other communities have banned certain types of fireworks. Beyond that, the people have the rights to buy and use fireworks. I think she'll be requesting and may even do it in the special redistricting session. We'll see. But I think she will be requesting the legal authority, the option to issue emergency orders for the governor to issue emergency orders to ban fireworks throughout the state of New Mexico.
Would you vote for that?
Would I vote for that? I tell you what, if I get a chance to introduce the bill, I will.
All right.
You know, this is something that would only be used in situations like we have this year. Extraordinarily dry conditions, no rain for months, high fire danger. This is not something that was going to happen every year, Sarah.
All right. Let's take another question from Cynthia in Albuquerque, talking about retardant in Los Alamos Canyon. Cynthia, what's your comment or question?
There are three. Thank you to the strong, healthy firefighters and the peaceful use of the National Guard for risking your safety and having courage to help the community. Question. The National Labs, County Council, Forest Circus, the forestry departments and authorities had 11 years to put in place preparation, prevention, intervention after the Cerro Grande fire. Where is the website and paper trail of those preventative action-packed endeavors to clear the nearby drought-infested forests, the Los Alamos Canyon, Pajarito Hill, Camazon, and the Valle Grande surrounding the local community? Where's proof of this preparation for 11 years? And then the other thing is, can you put retardant on Los Alamos Canyon and near the western area now? And my last is, the locals always pay the price, the teachers, the shopkeepers, the tech people. The lab can always get replaced, but the older communities and the underinsured are the ones that hurt. I suggest also that people read the book The Inferno by Tom Reeby to understand how these government systems behave and respond.
So
11 years, what happened?
Cynthia, are you saying that you're not satisfied with the planning
and
the process?
Well, 11 years is a long time to prepare. What happened?
I can't hear the callers.
Representative, you can't hear the callers at all?
No, I cannot hear them at all.
Oh, okay. Well, we have Cynthia on the line who is expressing some concerns about the planning and wanting to know, where can people learn about the planning process that was put in place to prepare for another fire?
Where's the paper trail?
There's been several planning processes. One, there's planning processes in the county, there's planning processes at the lab, and then there's a coordination of those two. I'd have to look back in the county documents. All of the county documents which contain emergency operation or emergency planning are in fact public documents, of course. And so I'm sure that you can once the county gets back up and running, people can contact the county and ask for those documents. I think they'd see them. They seem to have worked pretty well. The lab has its own planning, my impression is that certain of those documents are open to the public and certain are not. And then, of course, there's all the coordination between the county, the schools, the lab, and the state. So there's a team that sits down on a regular basis. When I was on county council last time, we actually ran exercises for emergency situations. And those were pretty well publicized. And then after those exercises, people sat down and said, okay, what did we learn? And my impression is that most communities at this point do this. Have not been exposed directly to Santa Fe, but I think Albuquerque does it. And most communities actually run these kinds of exercises.
All right. We're taking phone calls right now. We've just been talking about the preparation for fires and information for people. Cynthia, so that's something that we'll keep asking about, where people can find documents to.
Right. I don't want it proved, because if there was preparation and intervention and they had 11 years to prevent, why is it so big now?
Why is
I can speak to that just briefly from my perspective.
All right.
And that is that,
you knew that there was a drought.
Oh, yeah. No, we knew there was a drought. I think that's why a lot of planning has gone into the fire issue. This is really a question, I think, that we need to sit down and talk to the Forest Service about, because there's heavy fuels. By the way, let me say this. The Forest Service has been aggressive in closing the forest, closing access, et cetera. this spring. Whether the Forest Service has enough resources to do appropriate mitigation and clearing out is, I think, an appropriate question for the Forest Service.
We are actually going to have the Forest Service on later this hour, so why don't we hold on that for just a moment and give out the phone numbers again. We have some more people who probably want to get in on this conversation. We're talking about the Los Conchos wildfire, what's going on in Los Alamos right now, what's going on forest lands around the state. The number to call, 505-277-5866. 505-277-5866, 877-899-5866. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Let's take a call from David in Santa Fe right now. David, what's your comment or question?
Good morning. This Sunday, there's a group called Journey that puts on public talks at the Travel Bug in Santa Fe. And at 11 a.m. this Sunday, we're going to be talking with Joni Ahrens from CCNS, and Bud Ryan, who just made a film called The Forgotten Bomb that goes into the legacy of waste and the astonishing amount of waste that is stored in the nuclear weapons complex at Los Alamos. So that's this Sunday at 11 at the Travel Bug. The other thing is Glenn Walt, who was the head of security at Los Alamos in 2002, has written a book that is called Implosion at Los Alamos, How a Culture of Crime, Corruption, and Cover-Up is Threatening America's Nuclear Secrets. He's going to be in Santa Fe on July 7th to talk about his book at the Collected Works. And we're going to interview him tonight at 6:30 on the local radio station here, KSFR, so people can get a lot more information from these about the legacy of waste, the inability of the labs to deal with the waste, and the fact that they often don't even know where the waste is because it goes back so many years through so many administrations. And we now have Bechtel running the labs, one of the most incompetent and corrupt corporations in the world. And it's mostly a private weapons complex now. It has very little to do with anything that we would call a national laboratory. It's pretty much a private nuclear weapons complex. So those two things are going to be going on that listeners should know about. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, David. Next, let's take a call from Nancy at the Hampton Inn in White Rock. Nancy, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Who's staying at your hotel right now?
Right now we have the emergency operations team from LANL. We also have a helicopter and aircraft crews, and we have LA County.
And I know some of those people have been there for days. How are they holding up right now from what you can see?
From what we can see right now, it's been a pretty challenging, trying to get all these folks in, and they're coming in really tired. We are offering water to them as they check in. Some people are just working around the clock, sleeping 2 hours and having to go back to their areas.
Over in White Rock, have you been concerned about the smoke in the air or needing to evacuate? What are you seeing right now?
Today we are seeing a little bit more smoke than usual. I don't have a big concern about that. Today's probably the first day that we've seen so much smoke. But
really?
I think we're doing okay.
Yeah. And so what are some of the things that people are needing up there when they're working on the fires? What other resources are they drawing on in the community?
Food, and we want to thank the Walmart Supercenter in Espanola. Also, the Smith's Grocery Store that has provided plenty of food for our fire crews that are staying here. Also, we have local residents from the community that have also called in to offer their assistance in feeding the firefighters.
All right, and how much are you working these days, Nancy?
I have been here since Sunday night at midnight, and I've gone home for a couple of hours and came right back just to be able to get the firefighters and the response team in and sleeping at least 2-3 hours a day.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you so much for calling in today and for sharing your perspective on what's going on at the Hampton Inn.
Thank you, Sarah.
Next, let's take a call from Cal in Santa Fe with a question. Cal, are you there?
Yep, I'm still here.
And what's your question?
Hi, I'm Cal Spencer. I'm actually from Los Alamos, but like most of us, I'm somewhere else right now. We did a pretty awesome job getting people off the hill on Monday, And I know the community's done a lot of thinking on improving some of its main roads, and one of the principal considerations has been evacuation. But the problem is that virtually all of our roads leading away from the Jemez Mountains, which is where the biggest fire threat is, lead right down into 502. So we're basically in a funnel. And possibly Representative Paul could comment on what it would take to make something like Randia Road
a permanent road
that we could use as a second evacuation route, especially for the western areas and north of Barranca Mesa. That way we'd have two independent ways off the hill if something was blocked by a crash, or just to keep things from bottling up too much. I mean, Sunday we had very little time, as anyone who watched that fire progress can see, between when this fire started and when we realized we had to get out of there. So it was a great effort by interagencies in getting us off the hill and getting this fire managed, but perhaps we can comment on what we could do to get a permanent second evacuation route out.
Sure. So, let's Representative Hall, are you there?
I sure am.
What's your response to that?
Well, actually, I know Kyle well. He is the premier bicyclist in town. And the answer to that is, I think that's been looked at. That's going to take a lot of coordination between both the lab and the town, and maybe at some point the state. What I think many of us have always dreamed of is another route out of Los Alamos other than 502. Having another route down Rendija Canyon still drops us onto one highway. So I think we will continue to look at. I will say this, that the San Ildefonso Pueblo was very cooperative in opening their land for the town to cross. We had some problems with that road. It had not been maintained since it hadn't been used for a number of years. It hadn't been maintained that well. We had a couple of cars get stuck down in there trying to get out. But we will look at that. I think we always, as part of our work, I think planning, I'm sure that we'll go back to looking at alternative ways off the hill.
We have another question, someone talking about preparing for future fires in the Forest Service. Charlie, what's your comment or question?
Good morning. I've worked for many years on Forest Service contracts, including working on a number of fires, and I spent 2-3 week shifts on the Cerro Grande fire. First of all, I'd like to comment that I was there when the evacuation at Cerro Grande occurred, and it was mayhem. So it looks like this evacuation was a lot more orderly and thought out. I'm really wanting to address the people that are concerned that the Forest Service had 11 years to get ready for another fire. Having been a contractor for the Forest Service and dealing with them since then, I can tell you that the funding has been nowhere near what the U.S. Forest Service, as a branch of the Department of Agriculture, has needed for the last decade and so. During the Bush administration, there was a strong effort to minimize all forestry contracting. They attempted to privatize even administration of the Forest Service. At the start of the Obama administration, there was stimulus money and some of the infrastructure needs, which are many within the Forest Service, which owns lots of buildings, lots of facilities, were beginning to be met, but there's still a lot more. And thinning, which is the primary preventive measure, there just hasn't been the funding for thinning contracts anywhere in northern New Mexico.
And so,
I know this because I'm on the list. It just isn't happening, and it's a matter of congressional allocations. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, if you look at where what their funding levels are, they're severely underfunded. So you're going to continue having these problems because there's massive work that needs to be done, but no money to do it.
Charlie, hold on the line for just a moment. We have Senator Udall with us to talk, and we'll throw that question to him in just a moment. Senator Udall, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Senator Udall, what are you looking at today for the Los Conchos wildfire? What are you watching?
Well, I'm headed up to Los Alamos right now for the daily noon press conference, where we try to pull everybody together that has information on the fire and what the tactics are in terms of the day's efforts against the fire, and that will provide people with the information they need in order to plan their lives. I mean, we obviously have 12,000 people down in the valley and spread through various homes and shelters that are very anxious about what's happening at Los Alamos. We're trying to give daily updates and much more frequently, but at least a major press conference every day so we get information out. With the air monitoring has been, I requested the EPA do air monitoring, independent air monitoring of Los Alamos. The state's doing independent air monitoring. All of that is up and running. They started the flights of the mobile laboratory yesterday. We're hearing that there's nothing in the air except what you would expect from a normal forest fire, which is not good. As we know, vulnerable populations, the elderly and children, can be impacted by forest fire smoke. But we're expecting a very tough day today. On the ground, the drought has severely impacted northern New Mexico. It's even more severe in southern New Mexico. One forester told me those trees are just as dry as a piece of lumber in the lumber yard. And the winds are supposed to go above 40 miles an hour today. So there's going to be some very serious fighting up there, and we're just hoping we can keep it out of Los Alamos and out of the laboratory area and out of the residential areas.
Senator Udall, as people address that today, we have some people calling in today asking questions about preparing for fires in general. We had Charlie just talking about the Forest Service. Charlie, do you want to put your question directly to the senator about funding?
Yes. Senator Udall, I'm someone who has worked as a contractor for the Forest Service for many years on and off, including working as a firefighter on Cerro Grande for 2-3-week shifts. And what I've seen in discussing with Forest Service personnel up in the Carson National Forest is they have not had anywhere close to the amount of funding they needed for major thinning projects, let alone repairing some of their own facilities. I'm in Tres Piedras. Yesterday I stopped by one of the Forest Service workers here that's in Forest Service housing, and he showed me, you know, rotted walls. I've worked on repairing serious septic problems from things that are 40, 50 years old. And Congress is, you know, this whole idea of cutting budgets and everything, I think the Department of Agriculture and the Forest Service have seen that they just don't get funding for things that they need. Is there any way to make more of the Senate and the Congress more aware that you really need to take care of what we've got, and to prepare means spending up front to thin forests and prepare for things like major fires? And I'll take the answer off air.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we're in very tough budgetary times, and almost every program is going to be examined and looked at in terms of, are we getting the bang for the buck, and are taxpayers' dollars being used wisely? One of the areas, and I think Charlie's absolutely right, one of the areas, since we've learned about catastrophic fires, is that we need to do more thinning. Have we done enough? I would agree with him. We have not done enough. We had a good injection of money from the American Recovery Act. It allowed us to do some things in terms of infrastructure with the Forest Service and the other federal land management agencies. But the budgets coming along now have been very, very restrictive. And looking down the road, the House of Representatives has produced a budget that that cuts a lot of these areas and in a way that isn't smart and isn't wise. I think we can do the cutting. I think we can raise some revenue. I think we can put a tax reform package together. We can do all of this and put us on a good fiscal path. But we need to remember that a lot of the things the federal land management agencies do in New Mexico and do across the West are very important to our watersheds. If we have healthy forests, we're going to have clean drinking water. Many of our communities in the West get their drinking water from reservoirs, which are fed by healthy forests and snowpack. And if we don't protect that situation, we are going to pay for it in the future. I was with Secretary Vilsack yesterday, and one of the areas that he urged us, he's running out of money on emergency watershed restoration money. He only has $9 million in the account. He's asked for 40. I mean, that's an area it would be very wise to give him the money that he needs to help watersheds. And we know in across New Mexico communities that rely on watersheds, Raton, Las Vegas, some of these communities have had burns in their watersheds, and they really need assistance to make sure that the watershed is going to come back in a way that isn't going to cause sediment to get into their water treatment system. So there's a lot we have to do. We have to do it wisely. There's a lot of balancing, and with these cuts, we need to be very surgical and not do it in a blunt way that is very unwise.
Senator Udall, one last brief question. Are some federal dollars going to be coming into the state to help fight the Las Conchas fire?
Yes. On these big fires like that, we're talking probably about FEMA picking up 75% of the cost. FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Administration. They have helped with these kinds of disasters across the country. And once again, I would just emphasize that what we do collectively as a government and as a federal land management agency like the Forest Service or the BLM or the Park Service is we all together organize so that we can tackle these big major disasters, and we need to keep doing that, and we need to fund the agencies that do that on an adequate basis. It would be very unwise, I think, to cut in some of these areas, and I'm going to be standing up and making sure that everybody in Washington knows this is vital to the West and it's vital to New Mexico.
Senator Udall, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Real pleasure. Great to be with you, and look forward to getting out more information. Let me just say as a final word that the remarkable effort that these firefighters are putting in is out there every day. I've been out with them. Many of them have been away from their homes for 3 weeks, 24/7, fighting fires, little sleep. We just owe them all a debt of gratitude. And in my stay out here over the last couple of days, I've tried to go right to the front where they're fighting the fires and thank them on behalf of all New Mexicans. And I think they just deserve to know we're all backing them up and believe in what they're doing.
Absolutely. Today we are talking about the Las Conchas wildfire. That was Senator Udall joining us by phone. The number you can call with your comments and questions, 505-277-5866, 877-899-5866. I'm Sarah Gustavus. This is KUNM.
Support comes from Saggio's homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
Funding for the KUNM Call-In Show comes from the New Mexico Community Foundation, Growing Our Future Together, on the web at nmcf.org, and by the McCune Charitable Foundation.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We are getting a lot of phone calls right now. If you're getting a busy signal, you can also email us, callinshow@kunm.org. I'll be watching for your email and trying to read them on the air this morning. Let's take a few phone calls. Leo in Albuquerque, what's your comment or question today? Leo, are you there? All right, let's go to Ron in Taos.
Yes, hello, good morning. I'm really appreciative that you have this show on. It's sort of perfect. I'm glad I turn on the radio. I've been in New Mexico for 5 days, okay? I mean, I arrived with how to retire in New Mexico and have been, you know, traveling the state and just sort of like looking around and checking it out. And then this event has occurred and I'm just emotionally completely unprepared for what I'm now experiencing, because I sort of feel like, well, okay, I guess if I was raised in New Mexico, you know, they have some idea of how, you know, Los Alamos and a fire in near Los Alamos. I mean, to me, it's like a nightmare movie scenario that I'm living through. So I was calling in to sort of try and get reaction from the audience to see, you know, well, what's the, you know, how do folks relate to this? I mean, emotionally, this is pretty intense.
Ron, we have two evacuees on the line. Why don't we take some calls from them and continue this conversation? Ron? Andrea, are you there?
I am here.
You're an evacuee from Los Alamos. Can you talk to us? Ron just asked, he's moved in from out of state, and how do you feel as someone who's lived here for a long time? You survived this El Cerro Grande fire.
Well, I think those of us that went through the Cerro Grande have learned a lot in the last 11 years, and I, for one, am in a much better emotional state to handle this particular event. Somebody coming in from out of state who has never been through this or who isn't in an area maybe where there are natural disasters, I can see how he might be having a hard time. I can just suggest to him to take it one day at a time and be thankful that he's not actually living it, and hopefully he's not facing any, you know, loss of anything.
Right. And Andrea, you lost something. You lost your home in the Cerro Grande fire.
I did.
And so you said that you felt prepared for this one, but was it still, when that first call came for the evacuation, what were your feelings about that?
Well, a lot of anxiety. My daughters were 8 years old last time. They're 19 now, which makes it much easier. We were much better prepared. We have had 11 years to think about what's really important. And quite frankly, the house is not important. People not losing their lives, people not getting hurt, that's what's important. So I think that we were much better able to mentally focus on what we needed to do.
Ron, what do you think about Andrea's comments?
Well, that's reassuring to hear. I'm retired and living on pensions, so I mean, budgets are really important to me, and I sort of think of like, you know, well, I, you know, do I really want to, you know, pick up everything and move to this area where this is part of the package? I mean, it really was not in, you know, the retirement in Mexico, you know, brochures that I was reading, you know. And so, you know, I'm glad I came here, at least, you know, I realized that I wasn't getting the full information. But it is an awful lot to think about. I sort of sometimes I turn on the news and watch it for a while, and I sort of feel like, you know, well, maybe I should leave earlier than I was planning on leaving, you know, and I'm trying to calm myself and say, no, come on, you know, it's in perfectly good hands, and just relax, you know, but it's not easy to relax.
Ron, we're going to take a call from another evacuee now. Let's get Charles on the line. Charles, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, Charles. What's been your experience?
Well,
It's a little different, and this will be a little combative. First of all, we are very thankful to all the firemen and all the hard work they're doing and everything else. But God loves them. They don't have a chance. We're using 1950s technology to fight a fire. Now, what else in our history, what else in what we do every day is using 1950s technology? At the end of the Cerro Grande fire, my Institute of Geophysics at the lab had a symposium, a three-day symposium, brought in Forest Service people, NASA people, Air Force people, all kinds of people to talk about modernizing how to fight a fire. And we came up with a scheme which is state-of-the-art. We could do it, within 2 or 3 years. And 2 years later, I went and talked to Congressman Udall about it. I like Tom. He's a great guy. He wasn't even interested. And here's the problem. Everybody says we're going to fight the fire in the daytime. That's the worst time to fight it. Everybody knows that's the worst time to fight it because that's when the winds are high. You fight it at night when the fire isn't doing anything. Oh, we can't fly airplanes at night. Of course, the Air Force flies at night all the time. You can put drones up with NASA infrared detectors, just where the fire is. The fire boss can be looking on a screen and by GPS location can see real time where the fire is. And you can bring in planes at 10-minute intervals and put 2 acre-feet of water on the fire. You don't get a handle on it. You put it out. Now, a huge fire like this, it sounds terrible, but if they had done that the first night after the fire, they would have almost put the fire out. But nobody will look at this possibility. And as one who's been through two of these, I'm going from understanding to sheer frustration. The only thing that we have improved in the last 10 years is how to do evacuations. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Charles. Now, we have the phone lines full right now. You can email in your comments and questions. Call in show at KUNM.org. Next, we're going to hear from Richie in Taos. Richie, what's your comment or question today?
Yes, I had 2 comments. Nobody has mentioned the logic in having a nuclear facility on the side of a volcano in a forest prone to forest fires, and I just hope that the leaders and the public reconsider having a nuclear facility in that area that's already had 2 forest fires. My second comment is I haven't heard anybody talking about the real causes of the forest fire, which is drought, which I think it's caused by global climate change, and I'll take my comment off the air.
All right, we don't have any people on to address that comment right now, but we do have Brian Bird from Wild Earth Guardians who can talk about the broad range perspective on how we got here and what's happening next. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me today.
Did you just hear that last comment?
I did. And yes, climate change is a major factor in what we're dealing with right now. But first, I obviously want to express deep gratitude to the firefighters and the emergency responders, and I also want to note that the National Labs, the City of Los Alamos, the Park Service, and the Forest Service have been taking this very seriously over the last 11 years, and I think that's why we are seeing such a great response, and we're not seeing any serious threat to the labs right now. But the bottom line, as you know, Sarah, is we live in a flammable landscape, not unlike places that experience tornadoes and hurricanes. We have to manage the risk of living in an incredibly flammable landscape. These forests were born from fire. Fire is essential to these forests, and what we have to do is manage the risks of living here. And I think this last few days has demonstrated how well we are managing that risk. There's been no loss of life, very little loss of property. But why we're here is important. We've had 100 years of sort of mismanagement of these forests. In other words, we logged out all the big trees. We've had domestic livestock that eat all the grasses that normally carry low-intensity fire. And we've had incredibly successful fire suppression. And now you add climate change into that mix, and we're basically getting the perfect storm. And I think we're doing exactly what we should be doing, and that is getting out of the way and protecting our most valuable infrastructure, in particular the labs, obviously.
Brian, hold for just one moment. We are going to take a very quick break, and then we will continue that conversation. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Email your comments to callinshow@kunm.org.
The City of Albuquerque will present the annual Freedom 4th celebration on Monday, July 4th from 4 to 10 p.m. at Balloon Fiesta Park. Family-friendly entertainment will include activities for kids, live music with American Idol finalist Casey James, and a world-class fireworks display. Food and beverage vendors will be at the park. The only fee is for parking. For more information and park and ride locations, visit cabq.gov or call 311. A message from the tax-exempt City of Albuquerque.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. This morning we are talking about the Las Conchas fire. We have Brian Bird from Wild Earth Guardians. Brian, let's take a call really quickly. Looks like we have a comment related to some of your area of expertise. Madeline in Albuquerque, are you there?
Yes. My understanding is that plants absorb toxins from the environment in the air, the water, etc. So when they burn, they give them off. And this was a long time ago. Some California fires were studied. And there was definitely mercury that was emitted, and I remember reading an article a long time ago of a native who was on his reservation where they did uranium mining, and he couldn't use the sage anymore because when you burn it, it burns off the radioactivity. So that's not being addressed at all. The other thing is I think there should be citizen monitoring. I don't know who can do it, but I don't trust the officials because they just don't want us to panic. And the other thing is one of the big reasons why there's so much drought is the overuse of water. And I think we need to look at the institutions that really overuse it and aren't even monitored, like the military and I don't know about Intel, but things like that. So, and also the growth, the push for growth in terms of human development here.
Brian, can you comment on a few of those? Maybe first start with the water issue.
I certainly can. Obviously, water is a huge issue, and we're all doing everything we can to conserve and in these incredible drought conditions. And that's the other fact driving these mega fires. The mega fires are being driven by drought, and we have to learn to live with these fires. They're not going away. But what she was exactly right. There are toxins that are released by all vegetation when it's burned. In particular, mercury is one of them. One of the things we have to that makes me think of is the amount of treatment that we need to do through prescribed fire, allowing some wildfire to burn in the right conditions, and doing limited thinning where we can afford to. There's a lot of forest out there that needs to burn or needs some kind of light burning. And the Forest Service is doing that. So is the Valles Caldera National Preserve, Bandelier National Monument. In fact, we all worked together just a couple of years ago to go to Congress for a grant that is going to fund over the next 10 years at $4 million a year various fuel reduction projects all over the southern Jemez Mountains. So we are working at this quietly behind the scenes. It's expensive work and it's hard work. So, you know, people have to realize that it is getting done. It's just it's slow, and we're going to see fires like this no matter how much thinning and burning we do. They're driven by wind and drought.
The number to call this morning for the KUNM Call-In Show, 505-277-5866, 877-899-5866. Let's take a call from Carol. What's your comment or question today?
Good morning, and thank you for the show. I just want to follow up basically what the woman was saying a little while ago about other plants picking up materials that are toxic, and remind the public that there are hundreds of waste sites at Los Alamos. Some are radiologic, many are toxic, heavy metals and the other, and there is no cleanup technology currently available. The irony, on June 24th, right before the fire started, the Los Alamos Monitor posted an article about a 2.2-acre cleanup project that they're working on, that the cost for 2.2 acres of cleanup is probably going as high as $1 billion. And that cleanup, the way it's talked about, is just picking up the toxins and moving them somewhere else. You really never get rid of them. And while I and others are very focused on specific areas within the lab, The lab itself doesn't even know where everything is located. And I learned that on Monday when TA-49, one of the technical areas the lab, had a fire. And I tried to look at what that technical area has, what it was for and what's been done with it. They have tried to fix that site and hold the, you know, materials, plutonium, uranium, other materials on that site since the 1960s, and every effort they have made to cover it has failed. They've taken, you know, some of the materials away, moved them to other places. And what we have to convince our delegation, and hopefully they can carry our message, this is not a good use of land anywhere. Not, you know, making more nuclear bombs does not make it us safer. It makes us less safe. And we're in this tragic situation again, and my heart goes out to the people from Los Alamos, some of which, you know, I know are having effects, emotional effects, very similar to post-traumatic stress, having to evacuate again and all of the fears and concerns that we all, you know, share about this. But it would be a forest fire, and we would be horrified by that and doing everything to fight it. But having all of those
Carol, I'm sorry. We are right at the end of the show. Thank you for calling in today. We're gonna need to take just a couple more comments before the end of the show.
Okay. Talk to your delegation. We don't want it here.
Thank you, Carol. Maria from the Forest Service. Maria Garcia, thank you for joining us today. We have just a couple of minutes here. One of the things I wanted you to talk to folks about is closures of state forest land. What can you tell people about? What's the most important thing that they need to know right now?
Well, due to the extreme fire conditions, the Santa Fe National Forest and the Valles Caldera National Preserve have upped our restricted access to forest system lands. And so currently, all the lands within and around the forest and the caldera are closed to public access except for areas north of New Mexico 96 and west of New Mexico 550 on the Coyote and Cuba Ranger districts. So, for example, the Riachama area is open because the conditions there, of course, are very different. We don't have the extreme conditions that we are seeing in the other parts of the forest. So we have tried to leave open some areas for recreational opportunities.
Thank you so much for that information. And so people can go into those areas that are still open and stay out of the ones that the Forest Service has deemed need to be closed.
That's correct. And also the Carson National Forest, because they are north of us, their conditions are not quite as bad. So I understand that they still have some additional areas open as well for hiking and so forth. So you can also call Taos, Carson National Forest, 575-758-6200 to see what is open there.
Maybe people can head up there this weekend. Brian Bird from Wild Earth Guardians. One last comment. A lot of people have been talking about fireworks and keeping fires from starting this season. Any thoughts you have on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a no-brainer. It's unsafe, and we shouldn't be using them this year. So call the governor's office and let her know that that's what you want.
She has issued an emergency executive order on fireworks, asking people not to use them. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. We have been talking today about the Las Conchas wildfire and some issues related to wildfires in the state of New Mexico. We will have an update later today after a noon press conference about the Las Conchas fire. You can email in your comments and questions to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also find a podcast of this program on our website at kunm.org. Right now, the Las Conchas fire is estimated to be about 90,000 acres. That's 140 square miles. Officials hope to have 1,000 personnel working on the fire. And again, Governor Susana Martinez has issued a state of emergency to discourage the use of fireworks this 4th of July weekend. There's a ban on fireworks on state lands and in many cities and counties as well. This is KUNM.